had planned to be here today and present testimony, but Mrs. Planet Fairbanks asked me to present it for him. The committee should, committee members should have before you a copy of a work draft called CS for House Bill 806, Labor and Commerce, with 31582 and the number 2 written up in the corner. You should also have a sectional analysis in your packet and a couple of fiscal notes. The work draft was developed by our office from the original bill after discussions with interested parties. The bill would acknowledge in law that the Alaskan worker has a right to know about the hazardous or toxic substances with which he works, and it is based on model legislation developed in other states during the last couple of years. The Department of Labor, which is represented here today, has some information on the number of in-state manufacturers that would be affected by the first section of the bill. And from talking to them, apparently they have very little information about the products that are being produced in-state and what procedures are being followed to inform and protect workers. A particular concern is the potential siting of the petrochemical industry in the state. If you look at the sectional analysis of the bill, if you'd like, Mr. Chairman, I could just run through briefly what it includes. The first section says manufacturers to provide hazardous or toxic substance information. It applies only to in-state manufacturers. And it says that they shall supply the information listed on lines 18 through the next page, including the name of the substance, its hazards, proper handling practices and precautions, emergency procedures, and potential health risks. The next section applies to sellers other than the manufacturer to basically provide the same information. And the next section, 071, applies to employers who have to provide the information to their workers and also at their own expense provide training in the workplace on the nature of the materials they're working with and what precautions and procedures to use. Section 072 on page 3, reports to be filed with the department, simply requires manufacturers, sellers, and employers to file annual reports with the Department of Labor. And it lists what those reports shall include and says the trade secrets will be protected. 073, access to records, allows past, present, and future employees access to records, access to reports filed with the department and also to exposure measurements that might be kept by the employer. The department may require employees to furnish health and exposure records pertinent to an investigation, and the bill provides for regulations to be adopted to ensure that an employee has access to the information about hazards and exposure. 074 simply says that the department may disclose to the public information concerning hazardous or toxic substances and the circumstances under which the public might be affected. The last section is definitions, again, which were drawn from other model state legislation, particularly the state of Maine, which recently passed a similar law. Let's see. As I said, the bill only applies to in-state manufacturers, and the state of Alaska cannot require that information from out-of-state manufacturers, but can require that sellers and employers provide that information, which means that they, the sellers and employers, will need to get the information from the manufacturers, and it's generally available but must be requested. And we've got some examples of the what are called material safety data sheets from the Department of Labor that manufacturers generally have available, but they need to be requested from them or they're not likely to provide it. We looked at what occupations in the state might be affected by the legislation, and some of them, as examples, would be workers who work with asbestos, electricians and utility workers who would be in contact with transformers that might leak PCBs, cannery workers are a fairly large category because they work with ammonia that's used in cleaning operations and also with chlorine used for treating water. Welders who are susceptible to something called heavy metal fuming fever. People who work with spray paints and in auto body shops, and people who install foam and fiberglass insulation. So they would be some of the people who would benefit from the information and the training. As I said, there are two fiscal notes with the bill. One is for $10,000 and the other is for $111,000, and people from the departments, I believe, are here with their position papers and could answer questions about this one.
Do we have any questions? I only might make the comment that we didn't have this draft yet at 9 o'clock this morning, so I tried to get it so we could have it studied this morning. And
I'm sorry, it's been available for several days, and committee staff had it.
Wow. Committee staff had one, but they didn't have any copies. They made the copies since that, I guess. So, and nevertheless, at any rate, I haven't had a chance to really go over the bill.
Mr. Chairman, I did not go over the differences between the original bill and the proposed CS. They're not very major ones. I would say they're relatively minor. And if anyone wants to know exactly what they are, I'll be happy to explain
that. Dr. Randall?
Yeah, one thought that comes to mind. You're dealing with hazardous or toxic substance. Is there any reason to put in the bill known hazardous or toxic substance? There's a lot of things coming to light now that happened years ago that it was total ignorance about the situation. Mm-hmm. The employer, the person who was providing the material, didn't realize there was any problem with it. Mm-hmm. And now I think if this bill in effect, possibly people could back up on that. It seems to me that maybe it would be reasonable to make it clear in the bill through some procedure that what we're talking about are known as they're toxic. I think it's inappropriate to make people liable for something they have no knowledge of.
Well, Mr. Chairman, they would only be liable for informing their workers about what they know about now. And asbestos would be a good example. People did not mm-hmm. know that it was hazardous. Now they know, and someone who is maybe tearing down a building would have to be informed that there was asbestos in that building and what the precautions should be.
And the bill only applies to those
and
things?
Right. In the definitions section, there is a very explicit definitions of what those are, and the emphasis is on the most recent available information.
Thank you.
Okay. Do you have a question? Thank you. Now we'll hear from Mr. Hellstrom. Just have a seat and identify yourself for the record.
I'm Pete Hellstrom with ARC Alaska Inc., environmental coordinator for the company. I have to apologize. I don't have a written comments typed up at this time. If the committee desire them, we'll try to smooth them up and submit them later. The Also, the bill that we've been working with is the bills that came out here from, we haven't had a chance to see, the one that we were talking about just a while ago.
Go ahead.
Excuse me.
Go ahead.
I think in many respects, the effects of the bill are could have minimal effect to both Arco Alaska Inc. and Arco Exploration Company. We have, Atlantic Richfield Company has, for the last several months, been developing a position paper that would be distributed to all our employees that would follow along this, the apparent intent of the bill itself. There are several portions of language changes that, if executed, will have minimum effect on us, and I think continue the intent of the bill. We haven't got the draft languages, but could develop that later on if desired. But to try to go down what I have prepared so far, the limited background information I was able to gather on the bill makes me believe it is targeted toward is what is being called now an employee right to know bill, information to the employee so that we can protect the employee and keep him, let him aware of harmful material that might be in the work site to ensure that employee safety. I believe the right to know statement by this bill is apparently an effort to enact a bill which will address the concerns for Alaska's employees. The bill is similar to what other states have enacted in the recent last several months. California has finalized the bill, and I understand West Virginia and New York and other states are developing similar language. The language that I've heard of so far and the information I've received from Dallas is that the language is very similar. There's a point of disappointment for me about this bill is that the it's my understanding that OSHA is developing similar language at this time. There's a little bit of confusion on how rapidly that information will be developed, but it's my understanding that they are writing regulations, enabling regulations to ensure that the same type of information is provided on a national level. My reason for testifying here is actually twofold. Is first, the suggestion of the committee consider delaying action on the bill in an attempt to allow OSHA to publish their regulations so that we can essentially fill in the gaps of what might be missing on the federal regulations as it affects Alaska law and the safety of our employees. Secondly, is to request a modification of language of the bill to limit the degree of burden that is actually would be duplicative and excessive, duplicative of what the federal regulation or regulation whenever they're published, and duplicative by the bill itself, and that it's requiring annual resubmittal of the same information to each employee. We want to cut down the burden, let's say unnecessary administrative burden, but still provide and therefore make available to the employee this information. I think this is a part of our policy statement that is still in a draft form.
I didn't quite understand it.
Yes, sir.
You're recommending that the employer not be required to give the information, but that he give it to the employee if the employee requests it.
That's correct, except that the bill and another, the information should be made available to the employee. But the employer should not be required to copy and redistribute that information annually to the employee, which is the way I read the first draft of this bill.
So, okay, just a question. How is the employee going to know to request the information if he doesn't know about it? Isn't that the problem we're dealing with? That these are pretty technical areas that one might not know about.
I think that the requirement to provide the information to the employee will be there, either by this bill or federal regulations. Did that answer your question? I'm not saying that we, I'm not suggesting that we're hiding, trying to hide information from any board.
All right, go ahead.
There are advantages in my suggestion to delay the implementation of the bill itself is the ability for Division of Occupational Safety and Health, Alaska Division of Occupational Safety and Health, to work with OSHA to implement the important points that they feel are necessary in the federal regulations. And then after that federal law is established, then Division of Occupational Safety and Health could use the term fill in the gaps in the areas that they feel are not covered for Alaska concerns. The disadvantage of this suggestion may be the safety concerns of the division and the priority of those concerns. If there are some, if there's some particular area, phase of the work site or material that they do not feel is being addressed at this time, if that is a concern, then we could, I would think that they could write emergency enabling regulations to take care of that matter until we can get an organized, coordinated between the state and federal government bill enacted that will take care of the safety concern. Second point, understood. I have some comments on about each section. I'd be happy to go over those if you'd like, if you would.
I think we'd like to hear that. We can compare it with our analysis we have here, too. You go ahead.
Okay. While many of the requirements of the bill are or will be fulfilled by the proposed and ongoing programs of an Alaska Richfield Company, the scope of this legislation is much too broad. As it is presently worded, ARCO Alaska Inc. and the ARCO Exploration Company would be covered by all of its activities associated with the extraction of crude oil in the state of Alaska. The reason we'd be covered is we do extract crude and do, on the slope, North Slope, provide Arctic heating fuel, diesel, Jet A and Jet B, and a blend of gasoline. As a ARCO oil and gas company, we provide approximately 21 products that are diesel fuel, residual crude, and residual oil, and so forth, that are also covered under the bill. We request that the material data safety sheets that would be developed for this bill would be generic in nature to list it as crude oil rather than crude oil broken down by its different percentages of the material that's in that crude, generic by gasoline, generic by crude, rather than crude with a different API gravity breakout, therefore limiting the number of material data safety sheets that would be required.
In other words, instead of all these refined products, just to have it all come under a crude oil heading, something like that, along that order?
No. If the refined product is gasoline, that it would be gasoline as such and not gasoline by the different octane levels that
okay.
It's produced. Okay. If it is crude, that it be crude as and by the generic name and not crude from Crudo, from Kupari, from Cook Inlet, and therefore having different chemical breakdown or properties within that crude.
All right, go ahead.
General
Gardner.
What section of the bill actually deals with that distinction?
That is a question. I don't think that it is not clear in the bill. As
it
far as whether it be by generic name or by each
But that's one of the things you're going to supply us with, the specific language as to how to accomplish that.
I will try to do that, sorry.
And since that's the way you'd like it to be broken down, you should, it'd be a good idea to furnish the committee with
some
guideline, at least the way you would like to see it. Also, I think the committee should have copies of your testimony.
I will smooth this up and...
And give copies to the...
Committee?
The committee, right.
No, I'll smooth this up and...
All right, fine. We'll go ahead then.
After discussion with other employees, again, within Dallas and Los Angeles, ARCLA employees, Dallas and Los Angeles, it's determined that the House Bill 806 is really burdensome to the manufacturer without enhancement of health and safety to the employee. The additional language of the bill is too broad and should actually exclude exploration and production of oil and gas and their associated reduced fluids and wastes. Such exemption has been granted by the Congress of the United States in 1980 amendments to the Resource Conservation and Recovery Act, which is called RCRA, commonly called RCRA. ARCO, as I said, does produce diesel fuel, jet fuel, and gasolines, and it is the local gas station on the slope. And it could be required by this legislation to give notice by material data safety sheet to each time an individual or company purchases the one of these products. Therefore, every time you buy a gas station at the pump, the way the bill is currently written, you would be required to also not only give them the receipt, but the material data safety sheet that would be applied by the bill. This section, that is pointing down in the section 0501, is specific comments. we recommend that the crude and natural gas material data sheet be generic and not required to list each component and their associated potential health, safety, or environmental effects, as well as their physical and chemical properties. Such a requirement of 400 and forthcoming, hundreds of addendum sheets would be necessary for each crude or crude oil material data safety sheet. That's the point that I made earlier. Section 502, while ARCO does not repackage or sell in purchase stock, we do blend octane enhancers with the NAPA to make gasoline more slow. And also believe we would be affected by the section that stated earlier. At section 071, as written, this section would require posting of all in all work areas as the substance information for each substance utilized in that work area. As the oil and gas industry is scattered and diversified in its daily operations with low manpower requirements, it would be more reasonable to post or have available material data safety sheets at a point where employees report to work rather than at each work center. Operations of oil and gas facilities could change data requirements depending on the substance being used, but not always stored at the work site. A central file or posting location would be both more functional and better utilized. As we interpret the present form, the quality material data safety sheets or the other information that would be required by the regulations of this bill would have to be actually physically posted rather than containing a three-ring binder or something similar that would be, again, readily available to the employee. Supply employees with annual handouts on safety of construction and training and its proper handling and hazards would be extremely burdensome and costly. We agree with the initial training upon, either upon employment or when new substances are introduced into the workplace, but thereafter information should be supplied upon request. And that's going back to what you're concerned. And section 072 reports to be filed with the division. The section's requirements to file all information supplied to purchasers and employees, the safety procedures utilized in the workplace, and the quantity of hazardous substances actually used or produced, overly burdensome and costly. ARCA uses approximately 2,000 purchased stock items. Supplying the required information on each would require a significant increase in manpower by ARCA and would result in no increase in work and safety. The cost of sifting through the file reports and making effective use of the data by the state is questionable. I don't know how, with the information that was part of furnished to the state, I don't know how it would be used and what benefit it would provide to the state. For this reason, we recommend that this section is modified or deleted. The following definition in section 105, the following definition requires clarification or changes. Manufacturer, item number 10, which is manufacturer, should exempt oil and gas exploration and production activities as there are no change in the card as a sole from that form and nature. Item number 11, hazardous substance, should define items of combustibility, explosiveness, flammability, etc., but not just list the properties as the bill does. This is going back partly to your comment earlier. We feel that the 29 CFR section under OSHA, and I can't find it right now, but it's subpart Z, adequately defines the materials of concern, hazardous or toxic materials of concern in the workplace by adding the list of DOT hazardous or toxic materials to this bill, or other lists that may be created would be ineffective as it relates to the employee. An example of why it would be, while we question it, bottle gas, air, for instance, is a F1500-pound pressure, even if the DOT with hazardous material because of the explosive properties are knocking off the top of the bottle. But that is, bottle gas in itself is not a
hazardous or toxic substance to the employee in the workplace as long as he and should not be required to have a separate material made of safety sheet. Toxic substance, item number 12, toxic substances should be substantiated by lists by Alaska or other lists that are currently available that are documented to be a hazard or toxic. And believe that the subpart C is a good starting point, and then Alaska Department of Occupational Safety and Health finds it needs to be changed or added to, that they develop those lists based on the hazardous potential.
Representative Gardner.
Has your company, in referring with other portions of the company, several people, and supposed to, this has been adopted in several other states. Has your company found problems, these problems you're bringing up, what they found in the other states, or have you been able to live with the legislation in the other states?
No, the information I tried to provide here is applied to this bill as written, not so much to other states. The only part that I've received input on is that we'd like to make it as consistent as possible, therefore allow federal regulations to be enacted, and then from those regulations develop what should be
what changes or modifications should be made for Alaska. Okay. I do not know the effects of other states' enabling regulations as it affects the operations in our states. Is that?
Yeah, well, I'm just sort of trying to figure out if it's working in other states. If not, why? If so, then why wouldn't it work here? But
I think it would work here. I think with changes in the bill and depending on the regulations, I don't think that, I think that ARCO is supportive already in the workplace, a lot of the intent of this bill. And the employee right to know and the safety of the employee, we are supportive of that, and we have an ongoing safety program that does support that, and the policy statement that we're making along this employee right to know is being developed right now. It would be issued to our employees to further enhance the right to know and let them know that there is material on the work site that may be hazardous to them. So it's not a, I'm not making a statement that it shouldn't be written at all. I'm making a statement that it should be. The House Bill 806 should be implemented after OSHA implements their program or their change in regulations. And if there are sections that are covered by 806 that are not, that somehow someone, Department of Safety or Health, or whoever, feels is a priority that the right enabling regulations or emergency regulations to cover those priorities until we can develop regulations in a more orderly manner that would not be duplicative. There are several portions of the bill that's concerning the information on safety, the employee safety, our health records. We have always felt, and I think, well, we are concerned about the distribution or possible redistribution of that type of information. Employee safe health records are employee and confidential information. I don't know that how the bill or how the regulations of the result from this bill would address that problem. That's a concern for us.
Besides having a copy of your testimony, I would like to have document your objections, the parts of the bill that you object and would like to see changed, and the reasons for them.
Okay. With possible language.
If you want to, yes. But at least why you, what change you want and why you want them. And if you want to include possible language, that's fine too. Thank you.
Thank you.
Judy Knight?
I'm
not. Okay. Richard Grab? What is it?
Arab.
I can't tell if that's a DB. From the Department of Labor?
Yes. My name is Richard Arab. I work for the Occupational Safety and Health Program in the Department of Labor. We have a position paper prepared on the bill. Could I just read the position paper, please?
Do we have copies of that?
Yes, I believe you have copies of that.
Okay.
Basically, we're in favor of the bill from the standpoint that it will provide the employee with the right to know toxic hazards and toxic substances they may be working with. One of the problems we find when we go inspect in the workplace is that many times both the employer and the employee do not know what they're actually working with. And only after there's certain problems do they know that it may be toxic to their health. And then we called in. And by that time, of course, the exposure has already been occurred. And all we can do is cite an employer after the fact. The best part of this bill is the part that would require the employer to inform his employees of the toxic and hazardous substances and give training on how to safely handle those materials. The person who testified before me talked about the OSHA regulations. There was an OSHA regulation, a labeling regulation, that would require that toxic and hazardous substances be labeled and that certain information be provided on those. It was, in fact, proposed by Eula Bingham, who was the Secretary of OSHA, just before she left. Well, I don't know, I haven't really looked at the regulation that well, because as soon as President Reagan came in, he withdrew those proposals. And right now, as far as I know, they are under consideration. They're being looked at again. There was quite a lot of, from what I understand, there was quite a lot of opposition from industry of the OSHA regulation.
That it?
That's it. Do you have any questions?
Do you have any questions? I guess we have no questions. Thank you.
Thank you.
And we have Mr. Ernst, Muller. I have a hard time telling him.
I don't write as well as I used to. My name is Ernie Muller. I'm Commissioner of Environmental Conservation, and we were asked to come
and speak on concerning this bill. And I just would like to say that our department would support the general concept. This kind of required information. I'm in a rather unusual position, of course, as many of us would be, I guess, if this bill was passed. Of both supporting them from a philosophical standpoint within the department and also being an employer who has a lot of employees exposed to many of the things that are listed in the bill. And I guess from that standpoint, I would appreciate as much specificity as possible be provided in the definition so that as an employer, we have the kind of information we need to identify what types of substances are actually being regulated. And that could be done by giving the Department of Labor requiring them to list these substances or being more specific in the kinds of properties that we would be required to, so that we as employers would be able to identify what substances our employees are exposed to or potentially exposed to, that we actually had to provide them with information on. We also feel that there's a lot of paperwork involved in this program as it's written. There's a lot with annual reports back to the Department of Labor and that sort of thing. And I think that there are probably some possibility of eliminating some of that paperwork. We hear a lot about duplicative and redundant and overwhelming federal and state paperwork requirements, and I think that we could look at this bill and try to cut down on some of those. Another suggestion which I would make is to perhaps allow the Department of Labor to the ability to establish small quantities of hazardous or toxic substances which the employers might be exposed to, employees might be exposed to, which are exempt from the requirements of some of this information flow. My reading of the bill, I guess I could be facetious and say that if we allowed our employees to drink coffee in the premises that's carcinogenic, then we'd have to issue a fact sheet saying that, you know, I shouldn't drink coffee. But on the other hand, if you're dealing with very minute quantities of toxic substances, as we are in our laboratories, we might be able to get exemptions from small quantities, perhaps even on a compound-by-compound basis, as we have in the hazardous waste disposal program. There are exemptions for minute quantities of hazardous waste that are regulated by the state or federal government. So I guess, in summary, we'd be supportive of a bill of this type. We do think that there are some improvements that could be made to reduce the paperwork and to allow the Department of Labor some more specificity, perhaps through regulation, to define what compounds are regulated so that the employers and the employees know what we're dealing with, and perhaps also to allow them to establish some minimum quantities, either in storage or in use, that below which the employer might be exempt from the requirement for employing notification.
Commissioner Randall?
Yes, Commissioner, you mentioned the definition of a hazard or toxic substance, and I had some real concern there, too. I was just looking at the definitions. It looks to me, and I don't know if you want to venture an opinion or not, but on page 5, under hazardous substance, if we eliminated B, which is, I think, extremely subjective, and C under toxic waste, it looks to me like you still have a vast array of substances covered, and you eliminate any uncertainty as to that's exactly what is covered.
Yeah, if you had used an already published list like the DOT list or the federal OSHA list, then that would, it would still allow the State Department of Labor the authority to add to that list if the NARIC, after a certain finding process, they found that there was something that they felt should be regulated over and above that.
It just seems like to me that B on hazardous waste and C on toxic waste just would make it impossible to identify until after the fact. Potential problem. That doesn't seem like a very good thing to do.
It's kind of a shotgun approach rather than finally, you know. The other thing to be concerned about, that I'm concerned about, is that as an employer, is we want to make sure when we warn our employees that they may be subjected to a problem in the workplace that they take that seriously. We don't want to give them a manual with 15,000 pages in it and say, here's the things you ought to be afraid of. We want to give them something that they really can get their teeth into and understand.
Mr. Chair, were you serious when you said that, for instance, though this bill is written, copy might be a problem?
Well, it says that on C, which I think you referred to, reported in the Federal Register or a publicly available or private report known to the employer as inducing in manner experimental animals any of the following: mutagenic, carcinogenic, teratogenic, or transplacental effects. That's pretty broad.
Yeah.
I think that, at the very least, means artificially sweetened soft drinks. Not to mention, well, of course.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
Of course, we have the law in smoking in public places.
No.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Miller.
Public places.
And now we have a Dr. Rabot.
Dr. Ball, and I represent the Department of Health and Social Services, Director of the Division of Public Health. And the department supports the passage of this bill. We have some minor recommendations that we think that you should consider, but I have less problems than my predecessors over talking about generality versus specificity in the statutes, because I think the regulations is where you wish to delineate how many people are on the head of a pin. I don't think you want to try to put it in a statute. But the minor recommendations are that under section, and I think copies of our position paper are available to the committee, that under 051 that you consider adding significant levels of toxic impurities if they exist in a mixture. Some of the dioxins, for example, do exist as an impurity in chemical compounds. And that's we're getting now into the field of Agent Orange. That under section 071 that you consider possibly the change of mandatory requirements depending on the size of the employer. Would your requirements be the same for an employer that, for example, had 5 or 6 employees as one who had 2,000? That under section 105 that you consider substance manufactured outside the state and shipped in. As far as we can determine from the review of the bill, this talks only about the manufacture of things within the state. And under 073C, the company, it says that the department may require the release of records. And we're talking about the health records of patients, and you'll be breaching the confidentiality of medical records. I think the word required is should be regarded with a certain amount of apprehension, I guess, is what the best term I can think of. The bill, we think, imposes reasonable guidelines. I agree that it's pretty general. I think that if gasoline and oil, the production of them, we were looking beyond that. We were thinking about the hydrocarbons and the various other industrial utilization of products of oil. In all honesty, we did not consider that this could be literally considered the impact on the oil industry.
Any questions?
To be construed to mean that you would not be unfavorably inclined toward making that clear in the bill?
Yes, sir. Or no, sir, whichever way. The answer comes out to be, meaning yes, we agree that we have no problem with that.
You're talking about the crude oil industry.
Yes.
What about refined products?
Now you're starting to get into the question of the production of various chemicals. Hydrocarbons, and I think there you may want to consider a little more carefully. If you're merely talking about the production of gasoline, for example, from oil, that's one matter. But when you start to talk about producing all the various hydrocarbon chains and various chemicals that can be produced from oil, then we think they should be included in this bill.
Isn't gasoline toxic too?
Yes, sir. And the question is, how do you walk the tightrope of the obvious and the not so obvious? I mean, I think everybody knows that gasoline, for example, is explosive, that it's inflammable, and that obviously that there are things you shouldn't do with it, open flame or sniff it. How do you protect the people at the same time not reduce yourself to a status of you've got a wall covered with nothing but warning this is bad for your health.
In California, in service stations, they have a gas return system in service stations. Are you aware of that?
Yes, sir.
Is that necessary, important, or is it?
Yes, it is. There's a considerable amount of pollution that exists from the evaporation of gasoline when pumping into a car. And if you're in an area where there's a high concentration of automobiles, and California is very carpeted with them, it is important. It does reduce the pollution level.
Okay. Thank you, Doctor. Do we have anybody else that wishes to testify on House Bill 806?
Mr. Chairman.
Go ahead.
It occurs to me that this question about what OSHA may or may not do, I don't know how what the state does with funding of OSHA affects that proposition. But there's also a question of whether they would ever do it and whether we want to be dependent on what they do or decide the state policy. But it might be possible to avoid, if there was to be some future duplication, to provide that whoever's in charge of administering this, the commissioner or whoever, or somebody, or would have the ability to provide an exemption if they found that there was adequate provisions for this kind of protection by national requirements that were equal to the state standards or something to that effect, to avoid that without just saying we're not going to do anything and we'll wait and see if the feds do it, because One, they might not do it. Two, they might do it in a different manner that we did not feel adequate. And I guess at least those reasons. And I don't know what is going to happen with state funding of OSHA anyway.
Barry, you want to make sure?
Yeah, can I respond on that? Maybe it'd be helpful to understand the state's role in the Miller-Stagger Act, which is the OSHA Act. If the state has adopted the same or more stringent health and safety laws, the state laws supersede the federal, and there are exemptions given to those states, and Alaska is one of them, of where the OSHA laws are enforced by the state overall. So wouldn't necessarily duplicate at all because we have that ability now. It would be establishing guidelines. The basic issue here is a matter of public policy, and that involves the access of records. And that's why it was adopted in California and New York, was because of Love Canal, Monsanto, and those types, is that as under workers' compensation, that those records become available to know what those substances are doing, that certain ones of them can be mandated by the state, not necessarily by the federal government. And that's the purpose of those, and the question is as to whether or not it is deemed in the public interest that employees have a right to know what they're dealing with so that they may make a choice. And it basically involves a choice, because most companies, if they're involved with those, offer higher rates of pay, so it becomes a choice. And secondly, what are the true effects, not a hypothetical effect, of a laboratory animal long-term on individuals? And in that regard, I think most people would agree, even a lot of the companies, that is good information to have.
Representative Gardner.
Okay, I was clear by what you said. What would be the effect, we pass this bill or some version of it, then the federal OSHA comes in and makes some similar type requirements? What would be the status events at that stage of the game?
Well, ours would supersede. Ours would be primary.
Yes, as long as, Richard, as long as we can prove our standards are as effective as the federal OSHA standards go north, our standards would supersede the federal standards.
So a company in Alaska would not be in the position to have to file two sets of reports or meet two conditions.
Do you have any comments?
No, sir.
Any more? I think at this time then we'll set this aside for waiting some rewrite some amendments and work on it. Definitely we'll have to work on it some more. So I think we'll just put 806 aside for now. And we'll take up House Bill 886. And there is nobody here to testify on it, evidently. You? You want to, okay, you want.
For the record, my name is Jake Wells, and I'm doing a legislative internship and I'm representing the Veterans Office through the Alaska Native Leadership Program. Mr. Adams couldn't be able to be here because of a committee meeting without the fishing game budget, but he did send a letter here for the committee's information concerning House Bill 886.
All right, copies here.
This is a different letter than the one we have.
Yeah, this is must be. Maybe we ought to take a minute to quickly do go over it a minute, maybe see if we need to take any action on it.
Analysis of the bill, it does exactly what it says it's intended to do. It defines what is contained in the corporation statement.
What's the need of it?
Well, there's no definition now, so they bounce all over the place.
Yeah, you're talking about this paper that says House Bill 886, or, you know, that as a...
Which...
What do you...
I'm talking on the letter, March 17th.
March 10th?
March 10th.
Does this have to do with the shareholder suits?
Basically.
Against the directors for mismanagement of funds?
Well, yes, it's defining the ballpark, basically, because different courts rule different things. It's what it's supposed to be provided and what isn't. This just sets a uniform ground rules as to what is expected.
You think this leans more towards protecting the directors or protecting the shareholders?
I don't know that it leans either way, Senator Gardner. I think it defines what has, for everyone, what is required to be there, and I think that the terms of generally accepted accounting principles then applicable, because the accounting is not static, it evolves, and they change various standards in it. I believe there was one court case of where the current standards were applied to old balance sheets, of which were signed off by using the standards that were then in practice, and the court found that, well, that's not current, therefore it's not a good balance sheet. And I think it was a disservice to both sides. So it's just defining the ballpark is basically what it does. So what's expected by to be there.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Representative Randall.
We pass House Bill 886 in committee.
It has been moved to pass House Bill 886 and unanimous consent is asked. Is there any objection? House Bill 886 has passed out of the committee. We have adjourned.
Did you happen to-